Hello everyone, it is Wednesday, February 29th, 2012, and we are at the CSUN conference, and I am sitting here with Kevin Chow. Good evening, Kevin.
Hello, Daryl.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you very much for asking me to come out, and it's a great honor and privilege.
Thanks. Well, I just wanted to get started by asking you, a lot of us in the online Connected Blind community have gotten to know you, especially more over the past maybe year and a half or so, I would say. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came on the scene with assistive technology in the online Connected Blind community.
So, I mean, I guess it probably started off on Twitter. I mean, I've been, of course, online working with various assistive technologies before then, but it was really up until I got on Twitter. It took me a while to actually get on it as far as using it. I kind of was like, what's the point of this whole 140 character thing?
Right.
I don't understand all these various acronyms, what you guys are even talking about. But, I mean, even before then, I kind of did some level of advocacy, outreach to various companies and whatnot as far as trying to encourage and work with them to make their stuff accessible. But it seemed that people were using that Twitter. They were doing a fair amount of that on Twitter as well as work talking with other users of the various products and services to sort of provide this sort of this very connected and rich pool of users who are able to provide a wide range of perspectives. So I kind of saw that and sort of leveraged that, and I mean, I guess that's probably how it really started, and then that was probably, yeah, in the neighborhood of a year and a half to 2 years
right,
ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, since then I've kind of interacted with a whole bunch of different people throwing out various questions as well as checking out various products and services, whether they be mainstream or specific to accessibility, I mean, specifically for people who are blind or visually impaired, and just kind of tossed out my thoughts as far as if they were extremely new or I just found out about them or people were talking about them, and I just kind of threw out my sort of two cents. And I mean, the range of folks that I've communicated with, from companies and individuals and everything in between, has been quite large.
Right, because you've done some podcasting. I know you've done some. You've gone to some events with Google, right? You've done a few different things.
Yeah, I mean, I've done both the sort of virtual and physical, and sort of everything in between as far as the different media and platforms. And there's probably very few products and services and users and people and companies that I haven't had a chance to sort of talk with or know of in some form or fashion,
exactly.
Especially when it comes to accessibility discussions, advocacy, and just trying to move the entire, I mean, not single-handedly, but trying to do my part in moving the industry forward in what I think is probably the best or probably proper direction.
So you are studying computer science, is that correct? Are you working on a degree?
Yeah. At the moment, I'm postponing that. I've just
right.
got moved out to Atlanta, Georgia in the past week and a half, and going to be working with the Alternative Media Access Center, who's
right.
under Georgia Institute of Technology.
Right, and we're going to get into that, definitely.
Yep.
So, okay, so that's on hold. That's totally understandable. Yours truly has done the same thing with his college education a
sure.
few times, so it kind of is one of those things that happens for sure. Okay, so then you got into, you started doing some podcasting, you did some on your own, we posted some of them, some really cool iOS podcasts over on blindaccessjournal.com, and you did some VoiceOver On podcasts for a while, and you've done a number of things in the podcasting field where you demonstrated different types of technology. technology, including iOS apps. And, you know, Kevin is the one who really helped me out a lot. Not long after I got my iPhone, I was like, why in the heck am I having so much trouble with lists? Anything that has a list, like tweet list or mail or anything, it is so annoying. After you've read a message, hit the back button, and then you are at the top of the list, and you've lost your place. And you are the one that told me, oh, well, if you just touch the center of the screen, you will go back to where you were before. And I'm like, really? I wish I'd have known that sooner.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. I've done I used to run a blog. I've done several podcasts, and I've been on several mailing lists and stuff like that. I seem to go on these sort of like spurts where I get very interested and sort of do a whole bunch for a couple weeks or I maybe even a couple months, and then I just move on to something else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I kind of had my kevinchow.podbean.com as well as voicearound.podbean.com, and also even before all that, I posted a few with your willing and able to have me post those podcasts onto Blind Access Journal. So that's kind of where that started with the whole podcasting realm. But it's interesting that you brought up the whole thing with the iOS in regards to just the focus thing. I mean, it's interesting from the aspect of, I mean, even anything previous to the iPhone, sure, people may say that Code Factory was really the first folks who provided touchscreen access, but it really wasn't exactly, I mean, they were based on regions, and they were a completely different sort of user interface and experience.
Oh, yeah.
Where this one is, I mean, on iOS, it's by far probably closest to what the sighted experience is. So, I mean, it's definitely understandable in that, I mean, every single just user interface up until the iOS really has been, you go in a more or less linear approach, where you arrow around, you select, and you use either a number keypad or a QWERTY keyboard to input your data. And with iOS, it really added that spatial factor and provided sort of equal playing field. And with that come certain like nuances or anomalies as far as the information when you're going back to a previous screen. Like you said, as far as lists, emails, and tweet lists and whatnot, it may be presented, but just as far as how VoiceOver currently works, it automatically reads the place's focus on that top left control. But yeah, if you explore a screen, you'll find that that information that you were looking at previously is right there.
It really is amazing, and you encouraged me to definitely explore the screen, and I've tried to do my best to encourage my good friends to do the same thing, you know, and to physically explore the screen, and definitely do the trick with the center of the screen for the list. That's mm-hmm. just an invaluable thing. That is amazing. No matter whether you're an explorer or a flicker, you've got to use that technique. Otherwise, it'll drive you to distraction, right? You know.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a different kind of paradigm and way of interacting. I mean, if you're working with anything, I mean, Windows, I mean, you're primarily working on the keyboard. You're tabbing, you're arrowing around. I mean, it really isn't unless you're working with the iOS device where you have to be concerned with that spatial awareness, where things are, the relationship, and how to interact with things. It's interesting.
Okay, so you have had an opportunity to explore lots of different technologies. You've explored, you know, iOS. You've spent some time with Google, and you've explored Chrome and Chromebooks and Android and a lot of different things. What are your thoughts on the current state of you know, access to mainstream technology, be it web technology or mobile technology or something along those lines? What are your thoughts about that right now?
I think really within the last maybe year or two is really when we've made that pivotal turn when it comes to mainstream access. I mean, up until about 2 years ago, we really didn't have that. It was really up to these various technology vendors to provide either a sort of a custom sort of accessibility specific environment for which one could work in, or they were kind of trying to retrofit it from the screen reader or as a technology standpoint. And it really isn't until, I mean, sure, there was some effort before, but I really think most of it occurred within the past year or two. And I mean, definitely exciting times from just the standard web to mobile web and various iOS and Android platforms and their apps and stuff. I mean, I've checked out two different Android phones, the Nexus 1 and the G2. I've actually got the G2 with me now.
Aha.
But I mean, I've also, another thing that's quite fascinating at this sort of time, I was at the Consumer Electronics Show where I was able to see a whole bunch of iOS or even Android accessories, but the one that I was quite interested in, and I think probably a fair amount of the listeners would be probably interested in, is the Bluetooth and Wi-Fi accessories that can, that are hardware accessories that can interface with these iOS devices, such as
fascinating, yeah,
cooking thermometers, scales, blood pressure monitors, heart rate monitors, calorie monitors. I mean, all these different things. As far as one of the big things that kind of seemed to be a focus at CES was health. Just be able to monitor your health, be able to analyze it, and to work with that data, I mean, either yourself or to take it to your doctor to figure out how to improve your overall health, which, I mean, that's kind of been off and on for a while, but I mean, the fact that all these different accessories and devices are connected, but the very cool thing is the fact that they're able to connect with an iOS device which has VoiceOver, and for the most part, they are quite accessible as far as, I mean, the biggest thing really is that the app is accessible because that's the sort of the controller and the display.
Right. So in that regard, are there some specific devices that are known to be accessible right now?
It's not even so much the devices. The biggest,
well, I mean the app.
Yeah. I mean, things like the iGrill by iDevices, which is a cooking thermometer, that's accessible. There's also the Tanita, which interfaces with a body composition analyzer. So you're able to step on and get 9 different readings from your weight to your bone mass to your water percentage and your daily calorie intake and your metabolic age and several other things.
Fascinating. Now, what's that? Now, that's accessible too?
Yeah.
And what is that one called?
Tanita. So if one were to search in the App Store or check out their website, it'd just be Tanita. Probably do a Google search for that.
How do you spell that?
T-A-N-I-T-A.
T-A-N-I-T-A, okay.
Yeah. So, and there's also things from Y-Things, W-I-I-T-H-I-N-G-S. Sorry, that's actually Y-I-Things. So they've got like a scale, just a standard body scale that gives you only your weight and a blood pressure monitor as well. So, and they've actually got a single app that's able to interface with both devices. So I mean, it really opens up as far as a whole entire method of access. I mean, not only do you have access to information, but you've got access to information within your own household environment. There's also things like the Nest, N-E-S-T, which you can have that replace your household thermostat, and that interfaces with your home network. So you're able to remotely, from your iPhone through the Nest app, control and check your thermostat. So you can say, okay, I can look at my thermostat, and it's set to 68, and it's set to auto, and it's also set to heat. But you can also set it to a specific schedule. So let's say Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5, just turn it off because I'm not home. And at 5:30 or whatever when I'm about to get home, just go and turn it on up until like 10, 11 or whatever time. Or let's say you're even on your way back home, you can go ahead and check it and go ahead and flip your thermostat on.
Nice.
Yeah, so
wow.
I mean, it's so incredible. I mean, this past year or so with these various connected, I mean, really, the big focus with CES, I mean, was the sort of smart connected, I mean, really, it was kind of smart connected home, but it's almost smart connected world, really.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was absolutely fascinating, mind-boggling attending the CES show because the media describes CES as where there are majority of products you'll never see, which may be true because there's a fair amount of prototypes and proof of concepts, but it's a good indicator as far as the current and the future as far as just consumer electronics and technology goes, and the fact that the accessibility aspect is sort of being integrated within the mainstream and that it works with these iOS devices in particular is we're able to use these at the same exact time as everyone else is.
Right, rather than to have to wait for somebody else to adapt them for us.
Mm-hmm. Sure, right. I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, of course, there does need to be some work. Not everything is exactly fully accessible, but I mean, I think we have more access to information now than we did even 2 years ago, even 5 years ago. I mean, even a year ago, even.
I really appreciate hearing the optimistic side of the house on the accessibility front for sure. Because in some ways it feels like sometimes we take one step forward and two steps back. But maybe the curve is changing a bit.
I definitely would say that's been the case for the past year or two, and I mean, we're kind of right over that just massive pivotal turning point, and I think there are very promising and exciting things to look forward to.
Amazing. Well, awesome. Are you so all of this work, all of this sort of Twitter participation and podcasting and physically attending events and networking with lots of different people has led to some changes in your life, right?
Yeah, I mean, a fair amount of it was the more aspect of primarily volunteer and just kind of wanting to get involved in different things and make a difference and be influential and stuff like that. But I mean, it's managed to lead into some pretty exciting and impressive things. I mean, the first thing as far as how I even got to with my thing at Georgia Tech is it's interesting how Twitter works out. I believe you probably saw a tweet in regards to October of
2010,
yeah. Wow. Where you saw something about somebody saying CourseSmart wasn't accessible. There's probably a little more to that tweet, but that's the gist of it.
Right.
And you retweeted it, and I mentioned both of you. I was like, what? I kind of checked out the CourseSmart website, and I was like, okay. I wasn't exactly satisfied with the current thing I was using, which at the time was RFBND. Just as far, I mean, audio may work for some folks, but in my case, it just wasn't exactly allowing for me to work with the content and absorb it and understand it and work on the assignments. So I was like, it'd be a pleasant change. This whole e-textbook and 60% off sounds pretty cool. I'll check it out. And kind of was going back and forth with you and the other person who was mentioned in that tweet. And a tweet to CourseSmart and a couple emails and a couple phone calls. It kind of ended up going in circles for a bit, as it seems that a lot of this advocacy work tends to from time to time.
Yeah.
So that eventually led to me being connected with a very high-level executive at CourseSmart. Worked with him for a couple months and actually found out that CourseSmart was indeed accessible, but it required some extra things as far as actually contacting them and initiating it and so forth. And was able to help them improve it, and that led to me a couple months later, there was this project started up under funded based on the U.S. Department of Education called the Student E-Rent Pilot Project in January 2011, and they were looking for various sort of stakeholders or advisory panel members, and I was recommended by this executive over at CoreSmart to be a student advisor. So I was on and participated, and the CoreSmart executive talked apparently fairly positive and fairly highly of me with the folks at Georgia Tech and the Alternative Media Access Center. And that led to about 6 months later, after several advisory panel meetings and conferences they had me go to being their part-time quality assurance specialist. And that was in June of 2010. And then 6 months later, in December 2010, I was approached about a training specialist position with the Alternative Media Access Center, who's under Georgia Tech. So now, as of a week and a half ago, I'm living out in Atlanta, Georgia, moved from Louisiana.
Very, very awesome. And what is it that you will be doing with the Alternative Media Access Center, and what will that position entail?
So my actual title is Accessibility and Quality Control Specialist, which is two different hats, but quite a range of tasks and roles within each of those hats.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So be doing a fair amount of training, a fair amount of support, working with, interfacing with textbook publishers. Georgia Tech is quite renowned for being a research institution. They've developed something that fair amount of people are going to be familiar with in the past couple weeks, is this thing called the Braille Touch.
Right,
So I would be working with projects similar to that, as far as just the quality assurance aspect and just making sure everything's working, and working with the right companies. In this case, I mean, since it's going to be working with iOS and Android, that would mostly entail discussing and sort of working quite closely with Apple and Google and so forth. Things like that, as well as Alternative Media Access Center is an organization that is primarily quite interwoven and connected with various universities and colleges within Georgia, but they also work with the higher ed system across the country. So, for example, if Arizona State University or any place in California, if the college or university isn't able to provide accessible media of any sort in-house, or if it's quicker, or if they're able to get higher quality, they can get a membership with AMAC. So I would be doing the sort of quality assurance of these various media files, whether they be captioning for video, or if they're going to be textbooks, as far as making sure they're tagged properly, as far as, because most of these textbooks that are received from the publishers, they're known as source files, which are pretty much meant, they don't exactly have proper structure. They may not have the proper reading order. So AMAC fixes those things up, and I would be involved in sort of making the overall flow, as far as refining the current quality control process and protocol within that, as well as interfacing with the various departments, because I work with pretty much all of AMAC, not specifically within production or training. So a whole bunch of different things, really.
Wow. Well, that's that is a fascinating, you know, new position for you, for sure. And there's going to be a lot of diversity there, all surrounding accessibility, but in a number of diverse ways. That is really awesome. Congrats, Kevin.
Thank you. It certainly is, and I look forward to it.
So, you know, going back to a subject that we kind of just discussed, books. So, you know, we have CoreSmart, we have iBooks, we have Kindle, we have Google Books. We have, of course, we have Bookshare and other DAISY sources. What is your take on the state of ebook accessibility at the moment? Where are we headed?
I think as people who are blind or visually impaired, we've been, for the most part, our only choice, it's not really a choice, I mean, our only option was the specific accessibility solutions such as RFBND, who's now Learning Ally, and Bookshare and NLS and so forth, which, I mean, we're almost seeing this sort of blend at the moment as we're going through this transition period of kind of mainstream and accessible specific books. I think both are still definitely needed because we're at a phase where the mainstream accessibility of ebooks and e-textbooks isn't exactly solid and isn't exactly very clear and not exactly as cohesive as it could be. Which, I mean, it's interesting because the fact that we're seeing this blend, I mean, it makes a kind of interesting thing when one is actually trying to find a book.
Uh-huh.
One's going to have to, let's say you're just looking for a novel or a textbook. You're going to have to think, okay, which one of these do textbooks? Which one of these do books? And you may have to search like four or five different sources. So that's actually an interesting thing that one of the partners of STEP, the Access Text Network, they made this accessible textbook federated search where you pretty much can either type in the ISBN number or the book title or even author, and automatically all the accessible options are checked, whether that be mainstream or accessibility specific. So your Bookshare, your RFBND, your CourseSmart, your VitalSource, and all that. It automatically searches everything and will present you of where you can get that book you're looking for.
Oh, fascinating. Mm-hmm. How can people learn more about and use this Access Text Network?
Yeah, Access Text Network. So probably the quickest thing is just do a Google search for it. And it should probably be one of the first
results.
Are y'all
on a podcast?
Yes, we are.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, hello.
Hi, I'm Paul.
Nice to meet you, Paul.
Hey, Paul, how are
Daryl.
You?
Hey, Daryl Shandro.
Yeah, nice
Kevin
to meet you.
Chow here.
How's it going, Paul?
I follow you on Twitter. What's
Paul,
up, Kevin? How you doing, man?
Are you going to the dinner tonight?
Yeah.
What's your last name?
Paul J. Adam.
Paul
Twitter.
J. Adam. Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. You're connected with the all the stuff that goes on at the MLK
library,
the iOS training and all
I
that.
I moved back to Austin, so not anymore.
So welcome to the show, Paul. Hey.
Hey, what's up?
Yeah, you're on the air now.
Okay, cool.
So, wow.
Well, I saw you around. Just wanted to make sure I introduced myself.
Absolutely.
Paul's a great guy.
So we're back, and Paul has joined us, and we've been chatting about Android versus iOS. And you all missed a little bit, but go ahead. What were you going to say, Kevin, about Android versus iOS?
I mean, as far as if you want a sort of a single solution that's able to, you don't have to like download all these different things and keyboards and configure this and configure that and make sure that everything's working the way you like. I mean, it's the difference between iOS and Android. Android, you have the option, you got the flexibility to do all that, and you have to do all that.
Right.
Where iOS, it just works.
Yeah, you can go to the Apple Store, buy an iPhone, turn on VoiceOver,
and that's it.
Bam, it's there.
I mean, even with the Android Ice Cream Sandwich, you've got to sometimes TalkBack is removed, it's disabled or whatever.
So the extreme fragmentation and customization by all the carriers.
Yep.
They may remove it, they may enhance it, they may skin it.
Exactly. I mean, that's the skin part too. TalkBack may be included, but then certain aspects, like you may not be able to add a contact for some weird reason. Because they decided to make the contact UI a little prettier. Or, for example, with TalkBack, with VoiceOver, people are familiar with the whole flick gesture going to next to previous item.
There's no flick gesture.
No, not natively in Ice Cream Sandwich even, but if you get the ice-free keyboard from the marketplace and you configure that as your default keyboard, And then you ensure that you have the default, that IS3 keyboard selected, and you hold down the volume down button until it says navigation. You have to do that a few times, and you have to make sure you're within that virtual D-pad region, then you can do a flick left and right.
So if only you do these five things,
yeah,
then
it, yeah.
So it sounds like Android accessibility is for super nerds, you know, who are willing to go through all these hoops.
Exactly.
You know, Apple is for people who don't want to waste too much time configuring everything.
Yeah, even this geek, even geeks like me, I'm an Apple guy because I like the accessibility.
Laziness can be a virtue, save time.
Hey, I want to work on other things. Yeah. I want to actually work on communicating. That's my big thing. So whatever gives me the flexibility but lets me communicate and access information is where I'm at. So
I mean, the other thing too is I don't mind like getting under hood and sort of tweaking and modifying stuff, but when it comes to a phone that you're using on the go and when you're trying to sort of do things very quickly, you don't got time to mess around with all these damn things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I use the iPhone.
I've seen some people say, you know, good things about Android is you can change out the keyboard. Like, if you want to use a swipe keyboard, or I think in the Android presentation they mentioned there was some sort of keyboard you could use that was better for Braille, like a native Braille keyboard where you maybe typed Braille into it.
Fascinating.
I don't know much about that.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah,
but you can't change the keyboard out in iOS because you're limited.
Yeah.
You know, you're restricted with certain things.
I think that may have been the Braille Touch. Was that what they were talking about? By Georgia Tech?
But that's an iOS app, right?
That's both.
Oh, it's both Android and iOS?
It's that app.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You just type directly into Braille.
I think that's
what that's actually not out yet. It's still, they're doing the research at Georgia Tech.
That is awesome.
But, I mean, that it does have that option, but see, at the same time, the default keyboard on Android, you can't use. So, that option exists, but you have to take that option. So, it's like, okay.
So I think Android will evolve eventually to basically be the super nerd sort of thing where you want to customize every single little aspect. Whereas with the iPhone, you have the jailbreak if you want to do anything.
But aren't carriers kind of doing that too, though, sort of limiting what the super nerds can do with Android? I mean, aren't there a lot of phones out there that you can't update to Ice Cream Sandwich, for instance?
Unless you like root them or, you know.
That's kind of a...
That's the same as Apple, though, right? Then you basically have to jailbreak?
It's easier to jailbreak than Android.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard. I've never had...
It's easier to jailbreak Apple than it is...
No, Android.
Oh, it's easier to jailbreak Android. Oh, okay.
Probably the challenging part with Android is, since you got so many different manufacturers, so many different phones, you got to try to figure out what's the proper way to root that device and to see if there's a custom ROM available.
Let's go back and say that we're talking about rooting devices. We're talking about gaining access to it so that you can open the device up, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Customized.
Similar to jailbreaking.
Right. Okay.
But the challenging thing with that is, you got to go through all these different steps. You got to look through all these different forms. You got to Google. Even if you want to jailbreak on the iPhone, provided that you're on a proper firmware and that you waited enough time for there to be a jailbreak available, again, you just do a Google for whatever, the iPhone 4S or the iPhone 4, and jailbreak.
Yeah, there you go.
And you'll find it right then and there.
And if you pay attention to podcasts like Today in iOS, they will make sure you get the legitimate way to jailbreak.
And they've got a very detailed step-by-step write-up even.
Yeah.
So you're saying when you can jailbreak an iPhone, it's easier.
It is.
An Android. Okay.
That's for sure.
Yeah. That's it. If you get in on that window, for instance, when 5.0.2 or 5.1 comes out, Apple will close the jailbreak.
Until the dev team figures it out,
until
right?
the next hacker.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, well, I think that's that is a show for this episode of Blind Access Journal. I thank you, Kevin Chow and Paul J. Adam, you guys both, for coming on and talking tech with me.
Sure.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.